Hi, I'm Jay from JinxNavigator.com, and this is my podcast. We're making our way through all the issues of the Jinx. That was a newsletter for magicians and mentalists. It lasted from 1934 to 1941, and a lot of what we do as mystery performers can be traced back to something from the Jinx. This is the podcast where we browse through every issue and find out how many of the ideas are still usable. Spoiler alert, the answer is just about all of them. We're looking at issue number 11 today, which contains the editorial by Theodore Animan, A Cigarette Rolled by Proxy, Orville Meyer, The Fan Location by L. Ray, and then A Trick with the Fan Location by Animan, A Card to be Thought About by Animan, A Divination with Matches by Fred DeMuth, and The Card Unharmed, again by Animan. Here in issue number 11, Animan opens with a familiar complaint. It's summer, and the mail has slowed to a crawl. He jokes that if he were locked in a windowless room, he'd still know the season just from the silence. He's tempted, he admits, by the publishers who put out only 10 issues a year, but he worries that if he stopped, he might not be able to start again. There are a few recommendations in this editorial worth noting. A piece in Liberty Magazine by Will Irwin, Can We Mortals See Without Eyes, catches his eye for its serious treatment of university experiments in telepathy and clairvoyance. He calls it a must-read and credits the magazine's editor for consistently bringing quality writing on magic and mystery to a mainstream audience. He also highlights a novelty publication called the Ekum Echo, a magic newsletter disguised to look like a hometown newspaper. Animan finds it genuinely clever and advises readers to make sure that their name is on the mailing list. Then there's a story he tells that makes a point that clearly matters to him. A local fireman stopped Animan and spent some time describing a performance he'd seen over 20 years earlier, a substitution act by a performer named Ruclair. The man was still enthusiastic about it decades later, but here's the thing. He'd caught something. During the routine, he'd noticed that the shoes changed. Patent leather going in, a different finish coming out. He didn't know how anything had happened or when, but he knew the man in the cloak wasn't Ruclair, and the surprise ending was spoiled for him. Animan's point is direct. There are too many performers who assume their audiences aren't paying attention. This fireman, 20 years on, remembered every detail. Audiences notice things. The ones who don't perform for them accordingly are the ones who get caught by a man who just happens to look at shoes. A few other items round out the editorial. Robert Geisel of Toledo writes in about an improvement to the matter through glass effect. Lloyd-Jones has put out a book called Meet the Boys of the Pacific Coast, combination history and trick collection with photographs. The effect, a matter of policy from issue number 9, has been picked up by several performers and even had giant-sized card sets printed by Max Holden and Stuart Robson. Animan also mentions that pseudopsychometry from issue number 9 prompted a letter from Fred Rothenberg of New York, who had seen a medium perform that exact test over 25 years earlier, and he had wondered for all that time how it was done. Animan invites readers to send him descriptions of puzzling things they've witnessed over the years. No promises, he says, but he'll try his best. And finally, Ed Wolf of Rochester contributes a ribbon restoration using a common magical accessory that Animan calls very clean and simply done, and he explains the method in the last paragraph of the editorial. This first effect of the issue, A Cigarette Rolled by Proxy, is from Orville Meyer, and it's a nice bit of comedy magic. It's the kind of thing that plays well, according to Animan, on a nightclub floor or as a quick opener in a cigarette routine. Now, nightclubs and cigarette smoking are in short supply these days, but let's dive into it anyway, just to be thorough. The effect is simple and visual. The performer takes out a tobacco bag and rolling papers, shakes a little tobacco into a paper, folds it up, and pops it into his mouth. A few chewing motions later, out comes a perfectly rolled cigarette. He lights up and carries on. The rolled-by-tongue effect wasn't new even in 1935. Meyer acknowledges that straight away. What he's offering here is a cleaner, more practical version that requires no advanced preparation and can be repeated on the spot without any setup. The original marketed version, he notes, produced a cigarette that was often worse for wear by the time it appeared. This one comes out looking perfect every time. So the method involves a rubber novelty cigarette of the kind sold in joke shops. Meyer notes it's indistinguishable from the real thing at any reasonable distance, and a simple switch that happens as the cigarette passes from mouth to hand. The timing of the switch is the real craft here, and Meyer's handling is designed so that attention is naturally directed elsewhere at exactly the right moment. So even if you're not doing cigarette stuff, might be worth looking at the handling anyway, just in case it could be used for something else that you're doing. He also offers a practical note for close-up situations. Here we go. Swap the tobacco for ground coffee. It looks the part. It can be swallowed without incident if necessary, and it means nothing comes back out of the mouth for anyone watching closely. He signs off on that suggestion with a cheerful, "After all, it's for the sake of art." Full details on this at jinxnavigator.com. This next one is from El Rey, the fan location. And it's a card technique rather than a complete effect, a method for secretly marking a selected card as it's returned to the deck. Anneman tags it as one for the advanced card worker, though he notes that most performers can manage the basic handling with a little practice. Here's what the audience sees. A card is selected, the performer spreads the deck into a fan, and the helper simply pushes their card back in wherever they want. The deck is closed and handed to the helper to shuffle. That's it. So what makes this interesting is the one-handed nature of the secret work. Once the card goes in, the right hand stays completely clear, no suspicious hovering, no covering moves. Everything happens quietly in the left hand, using nothing more than a finger's sense of touch and a tiny crimp. The helper can even be asked whether they'd like to change their mind or reposition their card, which gives all the time needed without appearing to stall. El Rey notes that the smaller the fan, the easier it is to learn, and suggests building up gradually as the knack develops. As a location method, this is the kind of thing that slots invisibly into almost any card routine. The deck ends up shuffled by the helper, and the performer's hands have been nowhere near it at the crucial moment. Full details at jinxnavigator.com. I am not a card guy. I've mentioned that probably 15 times in the last 11 issues. But I played with this morning, just briefly, and it seems to work as written. So take a look at this for sure. This next one is Anneman's own application of El Rey's fan location from the previous item. And this is creatively called a trick with the fan location. And it's a nice example of how a single technique can be dressed up into a complete presentable effect. The premise is a simple reversal of the usual card trick logic. Anneman points out that magicians always have a card selected from a face-down deck and then find it face-up. So here goes the other way. The deck is spread face-up. The helper chooses a card from the faces. They remember it. Everybody remembers it because it's face-up. And they return it to the face-up spread. The deck is then handed to the helper to shuffle. The performer takes it back, spreads the cards face down across the table, and without any hesitation turns over a single card. It's the selected one. The presentation hook, chosen face up, found face down, gives the whole thing a tidy internal logic that audiences remember. Anneman notes that he's found the oddness of the reversal is precisely what makes it stick in people's minds. The method builds directly on the fan location, with one small additional detail in how the cards are spread and how the selected card is picked up and turned over that keeps everything clean at the end. Check it out at jinxnavigator.com. This one is another from Anneman, a card to be thought about, and he presents it as something he's been using himself. Here's what the audience experiences. The deck is spread face down, and a helper is invited to pull out any three cards, look them over carefully, mentally choose one, commit it to memory. The three cards go back into the deck, which is given a mix. The performer puts the deck behind his back, concentrating, and produces a card. This is the wrong one. He asks the helper to focus harder, fans through the deck so they can see their card again, and tries once more. Wrong again. Now the deck is fanned a second time. As the cards go by, the helper is asked to watch for their card. At some point, the helper says, yes, it's in there, and then the magician locates and produces the card, or it isn't found at all in the deck, in which case the performer reaches into his pocket and produces it from there. So there are three possible endings, and the method is structured so that the most dramatic finish, the pocket production, is also the most likely outcome. It's a nice example of a thought-of card effect that gives the audience possible multiple moments of apparent failure before the resolution, which makes the ending land harder whenever it comes. This was kind of hard to describe because there are multiple ways that this could go as you're performing it. So check it out at jinxnavigator.com. The next one, a divination with matches, is from Fred DeMuth, and it's a nice little impromptu piece that requires nothing more than one of those paper matchbooks you'd find on any restaurant table. in the 1930s. However, while not as common as they once were, you still find matchbooks around sometimes. A helper turns around and they pocket some matches from the matchbook so the performer can't know how many are left. Then they count what remains and tear out additional matches to represent that number. So if 15 are left, they tear out 1 and 5 and pocket those as well. The performer hasn't seen any of this and asks no questions. The helper then tears out any number of the remaining matches and holds them in their closed fist. The performer turns around and names exactly how many matches are being held in their hand. The secret is a fixed mathematical principle built into the standard 20-match booklet. The sequence of actions the helper follows will always leave the same number of matches behind after the first two actions, regardless of the choices they made along the way. So the performer simply reads what's left and does one quick calculation that even I could handle in the heat of the moment. DeMuth notes that this was adapted from an older card effect, and the translation to matchbooks gives it a new casual feel. Full details on this at jinxnavigator.com. The final effect in issue number 11 is from Animan himself. He calls it the card unharmed, and he frames it as a press and publicity piece, something he's been performing for committees and journalists for several years. He's candid that it's a variation on existing methods, but notes he's never seen anyone actually using it, so here it is. The props couldn't be more ordinary, a borrowed business card, ideally from the person watching, which Animan says makes it considerably more effective, and a plain letter envelope. The helper drops their own card into the envelope and watches it being sealed. The performer picks up a pair of scissors and cuts one end off the envelope, shakes the card out, cuts the other end off, and then slides the card back in so both ends are visibly sticking out of what's now essentially a paper tube. Then, with the card's ends in plain sight the entire time, the scissors cut straight across the middle of the envelope. The two halves are held together for a moment, then slowly pulled apart. The card is completely unharmed and handed back to its owner. The envelope does the work here, and Animan said he's gone to the trouble of preparing batches of them in advance, even mailing them to himself so they arrive looking like ordinary correspondence. He takes one out of his pocket, removes a dummy letter, and the envelope is ready to go. I'm not a big fan of the process where someone puts the card in the envelope, it's sealed, then immediately cut open and the card dumped out. The helper puts the card in specifically so that they can see that there's nothing else in the envelope, that the envelope is normal. I think if the card falls out by accident when you cut off one end, that could be fine, so be sure and practice acting surprised or frustrated when that happens. This could be something good, so check it out at jinxnavigator.com. And that is it for this episode of the Jinx Navigator podcast. To see every article in every issue of the Jinx, go to jinxnavigator.com and sign up. It's completely free. I'm Jay Jennings from jinxnavigator.com, and I hope you join me again next time when we explore issue 12, which includes Animan's thoughts in general, tidbits and ideas on several different magic effects. And I thank you in advance for helping spread the word about this, the Jinx Navigator podcast. See you next week.